They're 29. The children and adults who had been freed from the cloak began to wander through the graveyard. Some of them spoke to each other, trying to understand where they were and what had happened to them. But their minds were beset by confusion. Many were too bewildered to speak at all. Nolan and Clara, along with the other children, stayed nearby, for they recognized Serafina, and they huddled together. But many of the adults wandered off, trying to remember their lives and their families. One man stood staring at a gravestone.
"That's me," he said in shock. "That's my name. My wife and children must have thought I'd died."
Serafina understood now why some of the graves in the graveyard had no bodies, but she still didn't understand how the woman standing before her could be her mother.
"What happened to you?" she asked.
The stars glistened in her mother's mesmerizing eyes. "I am a catamount, Serafina," she said, her breath filling the icy air as she spoke. "My soul has two halves." Serafina breathed slowly in and out, trying to comprehend what her mother was saying, but it made no sense. "Come," Leandra said gently, touching her arm. "Sit here with me for a moment." They sat on the ground beside the pedestal of the stone angel, facing each other. "I once lived in a village near here. I was a normal human woman, but I could also change shape into a mountain lion whenever I wished to." As Serafina listened to her mother's story, everything else fell away. The cold air, the gravestones, the other victims of the cloak. Everything disappeared except the quiet, soothing tone of her mother's voice. "I was married to a man who I loved dearly, and we were going to start a family. I was pregnant. He, too, was a catamount, and we spent much of our time together out here in the forest, running and hunting." As her mother spoke, she gently wiped away the snow that was falling onto Serafina's hair. "But those were difficult times for all of us. The forest in this area was dying, twisted and withered by an evil force." Serafina looked over at the remnants of the black cloak and the scorch marks on the ground. "One day," Leandra continued, "I was walking down a path in human form, and I was attacked by an unimaginable darkness."
"The man in the black cloak," Serafina whispered.
"During the battle, he wrapped his cloak around me. I fought for my life, but he was far too strong. My husband heard me screaming and came running. He, too, began to fight. But we were losing. I saw the man in the black cloak strike your father down. In a matter of seconds, I was going to be overcome in the cloak's black folds. I was terrified. I feared for the lives of the babies inside me. I tried to change into a mountain lion to fight him with tooth and claw, but in that instant, the cloak sucked in the human part of my soul. I kept fighting as fierce as any mother lion has ever fought. And I finally escaped and fled, but the cloak had torn me asunder."
"I don't understand," Serafina cried. "What do you mean? What is asunder?"
"The black cloak tore me apart, Serafina. It absorbed the human part of my soul, for that was its purpose. But it had never encountered a catamount before."
"So you were stuck in your lion form,"
Serafina said in amazement.
"Yes," Leandra said, her voice ragged. "I became sick with grief. I couldn't find your father and feared that he was dead. My soul, my body, my love, they had all been torn apart, shredded to pieces. I did not want to live. Her mother's voice faltered from a whisper to nothing at all, but Serafina moved closer to her.
"But you were pregnant," she said, urging her to continue.
"That's right," her mother said, lifting her head. "I was pregnant. It was the only thing that kept me going. I gave birth a few months later, but it was not as it should have been. You were the only one of my four children to survive, and I did not know if you would make it through the night. And what was I to do from there? You were human, and I was not. How could I care for a human baby?"
"What happened next?" Serafina pleaded. "That same night, I heard the steps of a man walking through the forest," her mother said. "Thinking him an enemy, I almost killed him. I circled the stranger in the darkness and watched him for a long time, trying to look into his heart. Was he a good man? Was there strength in him or weakness? Would he defend his den with tooth and claw? This was not your true father, but he was a human being, and he was the only choice I had. I made the decision to let him take my baby. I prayed that he would carry you into the human world and make sure that someone took care of you, for though it broke my heart, I knew that I could not." "That was my pa," Serafina cried out.
Leandra smiled and nodded. "That was your pa. You were curled into a ball and so covered in blood that I barely got a good look at you that night. I honestly didn't know whether you would even survive, Serafina. And if you did, I worried that you would be terribly deformed. I had no idea whether you would come out normal." Serafina went very quiet, and then she lifted her eyes and looked at her mother. In the frailest of voices, she asked,
"Did I?"
Her mother's face burst with joy, and she threw her arms around her and laughed.
"Of course you did, Serafina. You're beautiful. You're perfect. Look at you. My God, I've never seen a girl so lovely and perfect in all my life. That night when you were born, I thought that man might take one look at you and drown you in a bucket like an unwanted goat. I had so many crazy, dreadful worries. But here you are. You're alive, and you're perfect in every way." When Serafina looked up at the sky, the stars were all glimmering and splotchy as she wiped her tears from her eyes. It felt like her heart was overflowing. She reached out her arms and hugged her mother. She wrapped her arms tightly around her, feeling her warmth and her strength and her joy and her happiness. And her mother held her close, almost purring, and tears fell from their cheeks, and the little cubs, Serafina's half-brother and half-sister, tumbled around their feet, joining in the family reunion. "I can see that your pa raised you well, Serafina," her mother said, separating them a little bit and looking into her face. "When I saw you the first time here in the cemetery, I thought you were an intruder, and I attacked out of pure instinct. After 12 years, I was far more animal than I was anything else. It wasn't until tonight, when I saw your eyes up close, that I slowly began to realize who you were. And now here you are, and you've freed me, Serafina. After 12 years, you have healed my soul. Do you realize that? I am whole again because of you. I have arms, I have hands, I can laugh, and I can kiss you. You saved me, and just look at you. You are the most perfect kitten I could have ever hoped for. You're fierce of heart and sharp of claw and fast and beautiful." Serafina's cheeks burned with heat, and her heart filled with pride.
but then she looked at the children waiting for her.
"It was the black cloak that did all this," she said.
"Yes." Her mother looked around at their confused and frightened faces as they huddled together among the graves. "They don't seem to know what happened to them."
"But you do,"
Serafina said, looking at her mother. She nodded. "Only half of my soul was in the black cloak."
"That must have been awful," Serafina said, trying to imagine it. "But why were all of his most recent victims children?"
"Mr. Thorne lived in this area for many years, avoiding detection by only capturing a soul every so often when he spotted a particular talent he wanted," her mother said. "But then something happened. The cloak began to take its toll on him. His body was aging severely every day. He was dying."
"The skin in the glove," Serafina gasped.
"He started stealing the souls of children, not just because they had the talents he wanted, but because they had the one thing he most desperately needed."
"They were young," Serafina said. "But how did you learn all this?"
Her mother stood and brought Serafina to her feet with her. "There is much for us to talk about, Serafina," she said. "But we need to get these children home to their parents."
"But," Serafina said, she wanted to keep talking, wanted to know more, and she was terribly scared that something would take her mother away from her again.
"Don't worry," her mother said, touching Serafina's face gently with her hand. "This isn't a fleeting run. I'm here now, and I'm whole again. In the days ahead, I will begin to teach you all that I can, just as a mother should. And you will tell me all about your life, too, to help me come back into the human world that I've been absent from for so long. We are together now, Serafina. We are family and kin, and nothing shall ever break that bond between us again." Tears streamed down her mother's cheeks.
"More than anything right now, I just want you to know how much I love you. I love you, Serafina. I have always loved you." "I love you too, Mama," she said, her voice cracking as she wrapped her arms around her and wept in her mother's arms.
Chapter 30. Serafina stood in the cover of the trees at the edge of the forest and looked toward Biltmore Estate. The sun was just rising in a clear blue sky, casting a golden light on the front walls of the mansion. A large group of men and women on foot and on horseback were gathering together. There were ladies and gentlemen, servants and workmen, and there was an urgency in their movements.
"They're organizing a search," Serafina thought.
Mr. and Mrs. Vanderbilt stood among them, their faces troubled with the news of yet another missing child. Mrs. Brahms stood with her husband, who was dressed in rugged clothing and ready to trek into the forest. Mr. Rostanov was there as well, holding his daughter's dog in his arms. Even the young maid and the footman, Miss Whitney and Mr. Pratt, had come out to help, along with the chief cook, the butler, and his assistant boy, and many of the other household servants and men from the stables.
"If we're going to find her, we have to move quickly," Braden shouted as he mounted his horse in one swift, confident movement.
Serafina's heart swelled when she saw him. That's when she realized what she was seeing. Braden had organized the search. They were going out into the forest to search for her.
"Everyone, please gather around," Braden called from atop his horse.
She had never seen him so bold, so filled with leadership and determination.
Rich or poor, guest or servant, he had brought them all together. It sent a wave of warmth through her cold, tired body. Then she saw her pa. He must have woken up in the morning and discovered she was gone. Overcoming his fear of discovery, he went to the Vanderbilts for help, even though he knew it would expose her existence and betray the fact that they were living in the basement. Braden turned and gestured to the dog handlers. "Give them this," he said, as he tossed a piece of clothing to the lead handler. It was her old shirt dress. The four brindled plot hounds bayed like it was a coon hunt.
"I looked for Mr. Thorne so that he could join us in the search," Mr. Bendel said from atop his thoroughbred, "but I couldn't find him anywhere."
"And you're not going to," Serafina thought with satisfaction as she watched the search party gather. "Ever."
"Mr. Bendel, if you would, please take that group there and go east," Braden said. "Uncle, perhaps you could take your footman and go west."
Braden turned to the dog handlers.
"When I put Gideon on Serafina's scent, he ran straight north, so that's where we'll try to pick up her trail."
Braden turned in his saddle and pointed in that direction. And there he stopped. At that moment, when Serafina knew Braden would see her, she stepped out of the woods. Unsure of what he was seeing at first, Braden lifted his reins, pivoted his horse, and looked out across the lawn toward the trees. His eyes found her, and a smile spread across his face. She could see his relief and happiness.
"Who is that?" Mr. Vanderbilt asked in confusion.
"Is that the girl we're looking for?" Mrs. Vanderbilt asked.
Everyone turned toward Serafina and looked at her as she stood at the edge of the forest in her torn gown. Today, she wasn't hiding. For the first time in her life, she was being truly seen. Seen by everyone. She stood there and just waited for them to understand what they were seeing. There was amazement in their expressions. Not just from the presence of a lone girl standing at the edge of the woods, but also because of what stood beside her. A large, full-grown mountain lion. Serafina's bare hand lay on the lioness's neck, touching the animal, holding her. The mountain lion wasn't just there, but with her, strong and silent at her side. On her other side stood a black Doberman, Gideon. The dog's shoulder was gashed and red with blood, but he stood strong and proud with the knowledge that he had fought his battle and won. Braden smiled.
"I knew you'd find her, boy," he said under his breath.
When a young lad in a coachman's jacket stepped out of the woods and stood beside Serafina, expressions of surprise and disbelief and happiness spread across the faces of the search party. Then a young blonde girl came out. Then several more children. Soon, a whole group of children stood with her and her two animal companions at the edge of the forest. Chapter 31. For a long moment, no one moved or said a word. No one could believe what they were seeing. Then the little white dog leapt out of Mr. Rostanov's arms and ran as fast as its legs would take it. Everyone watched in stunned silence as the dog ran barking across the lawn and leapt joyfully into the arms of a raven-haired girl who laughed and hugged and kissed the little dog with abandon.
"Anastasia!" Mr. Rostanov cried out.
Anastasia Rostanova ran to her papa. They kissed each other on both cheeks. Then she threw her arms around him and cried in desperate happiness. The sight of Mr. Rostanov finally reuniting with his long-lost daughter made Serafina want to cheer.
"There's my boy!"
Nolan's father shouted and pointed.
"Come on," he told the others. "It's the children. They're safe. They're all safe."
Nolan embraced his father as the other stablemen patted the boy on his back, congratulating him on his safe return, and Serafina could see how pleased Braden was that Nolan was all right. Clara Brahms ran to her mother and father and swept her arms around them.
"Oh, dear, oh, dear, you're finally here,"
Mrs. Brahms cried as she held her little girl.
"We've been looking for you everywhere."
As the lost children and their parents came together in joyful embrace, Serafina remained standing at the edge of the forest with the lioness. Her mother had been living in the forest for many years, and she was not yet ready to rejoin the world of humans, especially with a den full of new young cubs to care for. "My brothers and sisters," Serafina thought with a smile. She saw her mother staring at the great house, studying the crowd of people and dogs and horses gathered in front of it. Then her mother turned and looked at her. Serafina looked back at her, and she understood what she was thinking. As the lioness nuzzled her, Serafina hugged her and kissed her and ran her hands across her powerful shoulders.
"I'll see you soon, Mama," she said. "I'll come to the den."
Then the lioness turned to the trees and disappeared into the underbrush. When Serafina looked toward the estate again, Braden was riding toward her, and she couldn't help but take a breath when she saw him coming. He dismounted and dropped the reins. He stood in front of her and looked at her, and for what seemed like a long time, he did not say a word. She knew that her long hair was full of leaves and twigs, and that her face and neck were scratched and bleeding. The lovely dress he'd given her was stained with dirt and blood and torn in many places. But she could tell by the beaming expression on Braden's face in the warm light of the rising sun that he didn't care about any of that. He was just immensely glad to see her.
"I like what you've done with the dress," he said.
"I think this is going to be the new style this year," she said.
Then they laughed and stepped toward each other and hugged.
"Welcome home," he said.
"I'm so glad I'm back," she said.
Braden felt so warm and strong and loyal in her arms. This is what she'd dreamed of. To have a friend, to have someone to talk to, someone who knew her secrets. She didn't know what the future would bring, but she was just glad that she'd have Braden with her when it came. After a few seconds, her thoughts turned to what had happened during the night. The next time they were alone, she'd tell him everything. But she didn't bother with that now.
"It's over," she said.
"Was it really Thorn?"
he asked. She nodded.
"The cloak's destroyed, and the rat's dead."
Braden looked at her.
"You're amazing, Serafina. I'm sorry I didn't believe you."
Feeling left out of the homecoming, Gideon barked. Braden knelt down and hugged his happy, wiggling dog.
"You did good, boy," he said, rubbing his head.
"Thank you for sending him,"
Serafina said, kneeling down with him.
"I knew he'd find you."
"He found me all right, just in time, and he fought like a champion,"
she said, remembering Gideon's heroic leap. Then she looked at Braden again.
"We did it, Braden," she said. "You and Gideon and I, we found the man in the black cloak, and we defeated him."
"We make a pretty good team,"
Braden agreed. As she was speaking to Brayden, she saw her pa standing on his own at a distance. He was looking at her in amazement, relief, and uncertainty all at once. It was obvious from his shocked expression that he couldn't believe his eyes. Serafina could only imagine what he was thinking as he looked at her. His daughter, the girl he'd been hiding and protecting her entire life, was standing in broad daylight for all to see. She'd gone into the forest, deep into the wild. She'd stood with a lion, and now she'd come back home to him. She had led the lost children out from the forest, and now she was talking with the young Master Vanderbilt like they were best friends. She looked at her pa and thought about everything he'd done for her, all the risks he'd taken, all the things he'd taught her, and she loved him more than she ever had. "It's just like you told me, pa," she said as she approached him. "There are many mysteries in the world, both dark and bright." As she put her arms around him, he pulled her into his huge chest and embraced her. Then he swung her around in a great circle while she laughed and cheered and cried. When he finally put her down again, he looked at her and held her hands.
"You are a sight for sore eyes, girl. I've been worried sick about you. But you done good. Real good."
"I love you, Pa."
"I love you too, Sarah,"
he said, looking into her eyes. He turned and gazed around at all the people and commotion, and then turned back to her.
"Not that it matters none, but I finally got the dynamo working again," he said happily, "and I put a good strong lock on the electrical room's door."
"It does matter, Pa. It matters a lot," she said, smiling, thinking about how Mr. Thorne had sabotaged the dynamo to plunge Biltmore into darkness each night.
"I'm sorry, sir. I need to borrow your daughter,"
Brayden said to her pa as he grabbed her hand and yanked her away.
"Where are you taking me?"
she asked nervously as he pulled her through the crowd of people gathered in front of the estate.
"Aunt, Uncle, this is the girl I told you about,"
he said, dragging her in front of Mr. and Mrs. Vanderbilt.
"This is Serafina. She's been living secretly in our basement."
Serafina couldn't believe it. He had just blurted it all out. Her name, where she lived, everything.
She slowly lifted her eyes and looked at Mr. Vanderbilt, expecting the worst.
"I'm very pleased to meet you, Serafina,"
Mr. Vanderbilt said, smiling and cheerful, and he shook her hand.
"I must say, young lady, that you are my great hero today for what you've done. You are my Diana, goddess of the wood, goddess of the hunt. In fact, I shall erect a statue in your honor on top of the tallest hill inside of the house. You have done what I could not. The police couldn't do it, and the private detectives couldn't do it. You brought all the children home. It's simply wonderful, Serafina. Bravo!"
"Thank you, sir," she said, blushing. She'd never seen him so full of praise. She couldn't help but laugh at herself for thinking that fancy shoes were the root of all evil. It seemed ridiculous now that she had been so suspicious of him.
"So tell me what happened, Serafina," Mr. Vanderbilt said. "How did you find the children?"
She wanted to tell him everything, like a proud four-legged mauser that lays her nightly kill on her master's doorstep. But then she remembered everything that had happened. The cloak, the cemetery. They were adults, and they were human. The last thing they wanted to hear were the grisly details of the rats she'd killed.
The children were in the forest, sir, she said. We just had to find them.
But where? He asked. I thought we looked everywhere.
They were in the old cemetery, she said.
Mr. Vanderbilt's brows furrowed. But how did they get there? Why didn't they come back?
The old graveyard is heavily overgrown, like a maze now. Once you wander in, even by accident, it's a very dark and difficult place to escape.
But you did, Serafina, he said, tilting his head.
I'm good in the dark.
But you were injured, he said, gesturing toward her neck and her other wounds. You look like you battled the devil himself.
No, no, nothing like that, sir, she said, covering her crusty neck wound self-consciously. I just had a run-in with a nasty thorn. It'll mend. But the children were hungry and scared when I found them, sir, very confused, filled with nightmarish stories of ghosts and ghouls. They were terrified.
It sounds like you all went through an extremely harrowing experience, Mr. Vanderbilt said, his voice filled with both sympathy and respect.
Yes, sir. I think we should try to make sure that none of our future guests go in that direction again, she said, thinking of her mama's den with her brother and sister. I think the old cemetery is best left alone.
Yes, that's sensible, he agreed. We'll be sure to tell visitors to avoid that area. Far too dangerous.
Yes, sir.
Well, he said finally, sighing in relief and looking at Serafina. I can't say I understand everything that happened, but I do know a hero when I see one.
You mean a heroine, Mrs. Vanderbilt said. She put her hand out to Serafina in the fashion of fancy ladies. Serafina quickly tried to remember what she'd seen young ladies do in these situations, and did her best to approximate the motion of shaking her hand. Mrs. Vanderbilt's hand felt so soft and pillowy and clean compared to her own, and so different from the sinewy tautness of her mother's hands. "It is very good to finally meet you, young lady," Mrs. Vanderbilt said, smiling. "I knew there must be someone new in Braden's life. I just couldn't decipher who in the world it was."
"I'm pleased to meet you as well, Mrs. Vanderbilt," Serafina said, trying to sound as dignified and grown up as she could.
"Braden said that you live in our basement. Is that really true?" Mrs. Vanderbilt asked kindly. Serafina nodded, terrified at what she was going to say next.
"Do you have a job in the basement, Serafina?" Mrs. Vanderbilt asked.
"Yes," Serafina replied, feeling a smidgen of pride shining through her. "I'm the CRC."
"I'm so sorry, darling. I'm afraid I don't know what that means." "I'm Biltmore Estate's chief rat catcher."
"Oh, my," Mrs. Vanderbilt said in surprise, looking over at her husband and then back at Serafina. "I must admit, I didn't even know we had one of those."
"Yes, you've had one for a long time," she said. "Pretty much since I was 6 or 7.
"It seems to me that it must be an extremely important job," Mr. Vanderbilt said.
"Well, yes, I take it quite seriously," Serafina said.
"You can say that again," said Braden.
Serafina poked him in the side with her elbow and tried to keep from smiling.
"Well, in any case, thank you, Miss Serafina," Mrs. Vanderbilt said warmly. "We all appreciate what you've done, and you're such a little thing. I really don't understand how you did all this. But you brought the children home. That's the important thing. Thanks to you, we'll hear laughter again at Biltmore. It brings great happiness to my heart.
Amen, Mr. Vanderbilt said, nodding. Then he turned and stepped toward her paw. And you, sir? Where have you been hiding this daughter of yours all these years?
She's a good girl, sir,
her paw said, both proudly and protectively as he came forward. Serafina could see the worry in his eyes about how Mr. Vanderbilt was going to react.
I'm sure she is, Mr. Vanderbilt said, laughing. And it's to her father's credit, I say.
Thank you, sir,
her pa said, taken aback by Mr. Vanderbilt's generous words, as Mr. Vanderbilt shook her pa's hand. She could see the relief in her father's expression as he looked over at her. Then Mr. Vanderbilt looked at his nephew.
And you, sir, where have you been hiding this new friend of yours?
Here and there, Braden said with a grin. Believe me, sir, she's easy to hide.
Well, I can say this much, Braden, he said as he put his arm warmly around him. You know how to pick good friends. And there are few skills more important in the world than that. Well done, I say. Well done.
She loved the smile that fluttered across Braden's face when his uncle congratulated him. Mrs. Vanderbilt reached out and led Serafina by the hand. Come with me into the house, little darling. As she walked toward the house with Braden and her pa and several others, Serafina thought about what a wondrous thing it was. She had lived in the basement of Biltmore all her life. But this was the first time that she had ever walked in through the front door, and it made her feel like she was walking on a cloud. She felt like a real person. Now, let's us girls talk, shall we? Mrs. Vanderbilt said as she put her arm around her. Tell me, do you and your pa like it down in the basement?
Yes, ma'am, we do. But don't you mind that we're living there?
Well, I can't say it's the norm, and I can't imagine it being very comfortable down there for you. Do you even have proper linens?
No, ma'am, she said sheepishly. I sleep behind the boiler.
Ah, I see, Mrs. Vanderbilt said, horrified. I think we can do better than that. I'll send down a couple of proper beds with nice, soft, down-filled mattresses, a full set of sheets and blankets, and, of course, some pillows. How does that sound?
It sounds wonderful, ma'am, Serafina said, glowing with anticipation.
She just hoped she'd do it soon, because after all that had happened, she wanted to get under those covers and sleep for a week.
Good. It's settled, then, Mrs. Vanderbilt said, pleased as she looked at her husband.
Sounds like a perfect plan, Mr. Vanderbilt agreed. It's important that we take good care of the estate CRC, especially with the kind of rats that we have around here.
Serafina smiled. Mr. V didn't know the half of it. As they went into the house, she turned and looked out across the forested mountains. She knew now that there were darker forces in the world than she had ever imagined. And brighter ones, too. She didn't know exactly where she fit into it all or what role she would play. But she knew now that she was part of it, part of the world, not just watching it. And she knew that her fate wasn't set by how or where she was born, but the decisions she made and the battles she fought. It didn't matter if she had 8 toes or 10, amber eyes or blue. What mattered was what she set out to do. She wondered with excitement what her mother would teach her in the days ahead, what new skills she'd learn and what new things she'd see, walking through the day and prowling through the night.
She looked at the statues of the stone lions just outside the mansion's front doors.
She wasn't just the chief rat catcher anymore,
but the defender against intruders and evil spirits. She was the protector of Biltmore Estate. She was the hunter, the guardian. And her name was Serafina.
This is Cassandra Campbell. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Serafina and the Black Cloak by Robert Beatty. This program was directed by Linda Korn. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Text copyright 2015 by Robert Beatty. Production copyright 2015, Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.